Well, here we are again in John 15, which is where we're going to be spending our time for the most part today. And we're thinking about friends again, which I do every once in a while. Well, I do at least every 3 years on this sixth Sunday after Easter, because it's inescapable at that point. And as I was looking at this again and thinking about it from the perspective of servant or slave, depending on how that's translated in the various versions we have out there, that no one likes to be thought of being a servant or a slave. Not even, you know, if you watch Jeeves and Wooster on television, or you read Woodhouse, or you watch Downton Abbey, or one of those shows where all the things that really happen behind the scenes where the servants do it. We still don't want to be one. And there's nothing wrong with that, I don't think so. The difficulty is that if we're not careful, we'll think that, well, if we're not a servant, we have to be a master, because those are the two options. The opposite of a servant is a master. Well, that's not the case, actually. I put it to you that the opposite of a servant is a friend, at least in this context. And as I was thinking of this, I was thinking again of all the different ways that we can look at our relationship with Jesus. And there are lots of them, because it's a complex relationship, like every other relationship we have. It has different facets. And so we can think of it in different ways. And they're all helpful until we get stuck on one. For example, if you get stuck on Jesus as Lord, which he is, it's going to be very difficult for you to relate to Jesus as friend. And we're going to spend more time on Jesus as friend, because my experience, at least, is that we tend to get stuck on the sort of hierarchical view of Jesus rather than on the friend view. We tend to get stuck on the idea of Jesus as Lord. We spend our time thinking about Jesus, his corporeal presence, not so much from when he was here the first time, but we go into Revelation and think of when he's coming back and the poetic language there. And that's not a terribly friendly image, not that it's wrong, but we need to go beyond that to include more. And so we're going to talk today about being a friend with Jesus. What does it mean to be a friend? Well, I think we all have various definitions in our minds, and I don't think there's one cut and dried definition of friend like there is a cut and dried answer to 2 plus 2. You know, 2 plus 2 is 4. You don't have any other options. Friend, that gets a little bit trickier. Or at least a little more nuanced, or a little wider. It includes more things. So Jesus is friend. If we're not servants, if we're friends, what does that mean? Well, as I was reading, somebody said friendship with Jesus isn't a club that you come into and you get all these sort of benefits. Friendship with Jesus is just like friendship with everybody else. And what are the things that characterizes, one of the most significant things that characterizes a healthy friendship, is that it's a two-way kind of thing. If a friendship only goes in one direction, it's not a healthy friendship, probably isn't a friendship at all. It sounds more like a codependent relationship of some sort, where someone pours their wonders into your lack, or where someone takes advantage of someone else, whatever it might be. And that's not what friendship is. That's not what we want in the friends that we have, that we look around and see here. So why would we want that kind of friendship in our friendship with Jesus? Because I'm not making this up. You know, this isn't just some interesting idea that I've got. It's pretty clear. I no longer call you servants. I've called you friends. That comes after. Greater love has no one than this, that they lay down their life for their friends. Jesus is using the language. There's lots of other words that he could have used, but he used friend. So I think it's worth our while to pay attention to that and see, what does this mean? Well, it means you can ask Jesus for things, just like he can ask you. That's one of the things about friendship. Friendship, at its fundamental basis, is built on reciprocity, on a give and take, on a both and. And it doesn't mean that you're keeping track. That's something else that gets in the way of friendship. It means you do things for each other just because someone asks. Jesus told a parable about that, where somebody comes late at night and you're already in bed and bang on your door and they say, I need some bread for a visitor who's come. And the first thing you say, because you're human, is, no, go away. It's late. They bang again and say, no, somebody's coming. I don't have any food. I need to give them something. So what do? When your friends do this, you get up and you give them some food, whatever it might be. You do that, not because they're going to pay you back later, not because you're now one up on the little scorecard of friendship and they owe you one. I mean, most of us keep track of these things in our head at some level to be aware of, oh yeah, like that person's been doing a lot for me. I should keep my eyes open for opportunities to be useful for them. It's something altogether different than saying, okay, they're one up on me, therefore I must do something of an equivalent nature. Because that's something else. It's not really friendship. Lots of us spent some time there when we thought we were friends and realized that, no, actually, we were just accountants keeping track of debits and credits. And it never made us happy. No, friendship is broader than that. It's wider than that. It's deeper. It's more complex. It's more satisfying than that, than just keeping track. But are we friends with Jesus that way? Well, I think we are. At least we can be. We ask Jesus for things all the time. Call it praying. And we ask Jesus from this perspective, not just as God, but as this connection that we have with God through our relationship with Him. One of the best things about the incarnation, about Jesus coming and becoming a human being just like us, is it breaks down that barrier that we might have that says, how can I talk to God? God is completely holy. How can I do that? Well, we can do that because God came here in the form of a human being. And if we're too nervous to pray to God the Father, realizing, yes, it's still a Trinity, and we're going to talk about that in a few weeks, and we'll try and figure out how all that works, realizing we never will. But if we're worried about God the Father being so essentially holy, we can't interact with Him the same way that Moses couldn't look at Him without being burned up, we can talk to Jesus. Because Jesus was a person. Broke that barrier. He said, you can talk to me just like you talk to anybody else because we're friends. Now, this isn't new. This isn't just in the New Testament. If you look in the Old Testament, God does talk about being a friend to Israel, both the nation and to Jacob. Friendship didn't appear with the incarnation, but it appeared in a way to us that makes more sense. Because we can visualize Jesus as a person. I mean, maybe we got weird ideas. We tend to make Him white, which is not a good sort of historical thing. But, you know, we look at our friends the way we look at ourselves, so it's not the end of the world. But we can look at Jesus as a person. We can imagine calling Jesus up and saying, you know, I need a ride. And Jesus saying, okay, yeah, I'll give you a ride. Because that's what friends do. When my friend phones me up and says, can you pick up my kids because I just can't get away? I don't say, okay, it'll be this much for gas. It'll be this much for my time. And maybe extra if your kids are crabby. No. And I don't say, okay, I'll do this for you, but next time my kids need to be picked up, you better be ready. We don't do it that way because that's not how it works. The friendship brings with it a sense of responsibility that's got nothing to do with a quid pro quo where I do for you exactly what you do for me and vice versa. The responsibility of friendships are both lighter and heavier than that. Because there's all kinds of things I'll do for my friends that I wouldn't do if you tried to pay me. If some stranger came and said, I need you to go pick up my kids, here's $10, I'd say no. Well, I hope some stranger wouldn't do that. That's kind of strange all in and of itself. But we do things for our friends that we would never do for money. And when our friends try to pay us for what we do, does that make us happy? Or does that kind of offensive, almost? Which doesn't mean we don't do this sometimes, because sometimes you ask your friends to do something really significant, and you know, coming up with some money to cover some of that, that's okay. And it's still kind of uncomfortable, and we have to work it out, but you know, eventually we do. Sometimes Jesus asks us to do things as well. Sometimes they're hard. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes Jesus says, hey, stop doing the dishes and go play with your grandkids. Dishes will be there forever. They're only going to be three for a year. Sometimes Jesus says, get up. And you think, what, do I have to pray for somebody? He says, no, the The sunrise is glorious. Go outside and look at it. And then sometimes, Jesus says, I want you to go and talk to this person about this thing. And sometimes that's hard. But sometimes that's what we do for our friends. First, our friend Jesus asked us, and then the friend that we're talking to. How many of you, and I'm not asking for a show of hands, and you don't have to tell anybody what it was. How many of you had at least one experience where a friend of yours told you something you really did not want to hear, but you needed to hear? Picture that for a moment, if you can, if it's not too painful to remember. And imagine an acquaintance, or worse yet, a stranger told you the same thing. What's the outcome then? I've had friends of mine point out character flaws, problems of various sorts that I have then gone on to painfully address, because if they're easy to fix, I would have done it myself. But I needed somebody to point it out to me. And if a stranger would have done that, I probably would have dug in my heels and gotten worse. That's my response to that kind of thing. I don't know very many people who respond well to a stranger coming and telling you this thing. My daughter, Haley, goes through this on a regular basis, where people who think they know how all children should be raised and that she's too young to be trusted with a child will tell her what to do in public. Oh, don't do that. And I'm just thinking, I must have raised her right because she hasn't punched anybody yet. The ability of strangers to be offensive to young mothers is absolutely shocking. But I can tell her the same thing. And it's not just because I'm a parent, because her friends can tell her the same thing. And she'll go, oh, I hadn't noticed that. Or she will then explain what's going on. Because there's a relationship there. Something can happen and change can happen. Sometimes when you go to a friend and say, I think I see this thing about you, and they explain it, the correction actually comes back towards you because you just didn't understand. And what comes out of this? A stronger friendship, a better friendship. Our friendship with Jesus is the same way, because sometimes Jesus tells us things about ourselves that we don't want to hear. Because he knows us well. And I listen to those things when he tells them to me, because he certainly does, even now. It's not like you somehow grow out of the need for your friends to help you become better. And I hear that. The older I get, the more I hear it from someone who loves me and cares for me as a friend does, rather than as a vengeful God that I kind of grew up with. Not that anybody tried to teach me that. That's my interpretation on what I learned when I was little. But the older I get, the more I hear Jesus saying, hey, you should try this because it'll be better. And I want you to be better. I don't want you to feel guilty. I'm not telling you this so you'll feel bad about yourself. I'm telling you about this so you will stop doing it, because then you'll be happier. And I am. Because that's what friends do. Friends have a call on each other. Now, we don't correct Jesus' behavior. We don't point out his character flaws because he doesn't have them. What we do is we are part of this reciprocal relationship is that we love Jesus. And we love each other. It's all over 1 John. It's in 1 John so much it's confusing who you're supposed to love, except everybody. Somebody said the first couple of paragraphs in 1 John basically defy what's actually going on, except that you're supposed to love people. That comes out clear. The rest of it's kind of blurry. That's one of the ways that we build into our relationship with Jesus. Because, you know, we can't lend Jesus $10 till payday, because he doesn't need that. We can lend a friend of ours $10. And in a very real way, that's like doing it to Jesus. The part about giving a cup of cold water to someone is as if you've given it to Jesus. Do you think that's in there by accident? Or is it in there for us to be reminded that because we can't minister to Jesus because he has no corporeal body, we can't, you know, give him a lift when he's tired because he never gets tired anymore. But when we give a lift to our friends, and even to strangers, that's part of our relationship with him. That's ministering to Jesus. I remember hearing that when I was younger, and people would talk about ministering to Jesus. I thought, how do you do that? Jesus doesn't need anything. You can't make him feel better. You can't, you know, rub his sore shoulder. When I rubbed my mother's sore shoulder when I was younger, that was a gift to Jesus. Especially now when we're a little bit older and we understand what we're doing and we can actually do these things, not trying to build up credit with Jesus, but saying, you've given me this opportunity to make a difference to this person that I know, that I love, that I want to do well, and I'm doing it to you at the same time. It's great. It's like a bonus. Because that's what friends do. We sometimes get hung up on that whole language of command in this passage. And we need to address this. But when you look at the last verse that was read for us in this translation, it says, this is my command. Love each other. Well, it goes back to that whole thing about our friends telling us things we don't want to hear. Have you ever had your friends tell you you had to do something? I have. What's the difference between that and a command? Friends give commands to friends sometimes. Not often. But it doesn't mean that you're not friends anymore. When people command me to go and address that thing, whether it's a relationship that I've messed up or a personal issue, whatever it might be, does that mean that they're not friends anymore and suddenly they're bosses? No, it doesn't. It just means that they've been pushed to that level where they have to put it that way because they want me to be well. That's what friends do. That's what Jesus did. Greater love has no one to lay down their life for their friends. Most of us don't have that. That's not a call for most of us, for which we are all grateful. But if that's the ultimate test, the ultimate proof of friendship, and I think many people would say it is, then Jesus did it. Because we see all over Scripture that Jesus laid down his life. That Jesus made choices that ended in that, knowing that's how they would end. And he did it not to show off. He did it not to make us feel guilty. Not to make us ashamed of our existence. He did it because he loved us. Jesus is not telling us to go find some way to die for your friends. What Jesus is saying here is that if that's the ultimate, anything you do up to that is a good thing. If you're willing to do that, won't you be willing to have that embarrassing conversation about something that somebody needs to hear? Well, I hope so, because if you're willing to die for somebody, surely you're willing to be embarrassed for a few minutes. If you're willing to die for someone, surely you're willing to encourage your friends when they need you the most, even if you have other places that you'd rather be. People find it peculiar that I like doing funerals. I say, I don't like people being dead. That's bad. That's never good. I'm never happy about that. But being able to be part of that saying goodbye, that closure, that sense of celebration of a life, that sense of giving people permission to grieve. I do that because people need it and because I want people to be better. Not because I like the fact that someone's gone. Funerals are hard. They should be hard. But I do them because we need them done and because of you. Preaching is easy for me. Compared to you, at least most of you, so you've told me. It's not easy. I don't roll out of bed on Sunday and go, I wonder what I should talk about. I prepare in the time I've got because this is what I can do to tell Jesus I love him and to tell you the same. How many of you would do what I do for any sum of money? I'm guessing some of you would say there is no sum of money that would be enough for you to do this for, say, 10 years. It's coming up on 10 years in October. That doesn't make me special. It means I've got a special ability, perhaps, or it means that I've been given this gift from God. But I do it not because of the money, And I don't do it because God will strike me dead if I don't. I do it because it's something that I can give to you. And the things that you give back to me are things I can't get anywhere else. And I don't count them up any more than you count these up. One of the reasons I eventually learned or pushed myself or maybe even forced myself to preach without like a full written manuscript in front of me. You know why? It's so I can look at you when I talk. Because you matter to me. Because we're friends. And if we're friends, and we do these things for each other, because you occasionally tell me things that I might not want to hear, and I'm pretty sure I've said things from up here at least once that at least one of you didn't want to hear, and probably more than that. We do it because we love each other. Sure, it's a command. This is my command, love each other. It's a command that comes from the person who loves you most, who says, do this and you will be the best you can possibly be. I'm telling you to do this because it's what you really want to do. That's what it means to be a friend with Jesus. And we are. It's a reciprocal relationship just like this one. Just like that friend you had in school that you still have now, or that friend you had in school you haven't talked to since. This is what real friendship is like. And we get to have it with each other. We get to have it with Jesus. We get to celebrate it every Sunday. Amen.